It's another edition of the Falls Cast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, after a very, very rainy Labor Day, it is 84, sunny, and beautiful. I think my yard is still pretty soft from all that rain. And I'm thinking that there was maybe a lot of people who were not accustomed to having water in their basements who now have water in their basements after yesterday. Hopefully that will not be a regular thing. Those of us who live in Cuyahoga Falls know that the basement's going to get wet. It's just part of life here. Am I right?
Yes, especially when you don't have a sump pump.
Oh.
That's a wet-ass basement.
No.
I'm going there.
No.
I'm going there. I got a head shaking from everybody.
I'm so glad I opened this section to commentary.
It's the last time you'll do that.
That was your first mistake.
We are joined by some of our favorite Fallscasters, our good friends. First of all, since they've already been being talkative, the Searles, Mike and Suzanne. Say hello, y'all.
Hello.
Hello, y'all.
Mike's my best friend.
I hate you.
We also have our buddy, arts guru extraordinaire, Bart Sullivan's with us.
Hello.
And our friend Patrick Catanese is back.
Hello.
And the ever beardsome Stephen Mule, y'all.
Hello.
I don't know why I'm saying y'all so much today. It's like that was three just by saying, hey, I've been saying that word a lot today. I need to stop.
Well, wasn't your brother in town?
It's true.
Down there in Cincinnati, y'all.
Yeah, he was in town, so that must have like brought it out a little bit.
Lawrence, y'all.
Whenever I go back home, I get a little bit of that
twang.
Yeah. You kind of slip into it easily.
My wife studied linguistics, and she used to tell a story about them watching a video in class or something where a woman literally divorced her husband because she didn't want to, quote, have Southern talking babies. And it was because when they met, she had never heard him speak like that. And then they started to take a trip to visit his family, who apparently are from the South. And the accent came out just like me saying y'all and Suzanne saying library.
Hey, it is library.
Library.
My daddy says it that way. Thank you very much.
Your daddy.
Run around that pick 'em up truck.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Lattes. Head out to, what's that lake out there?
Oh.
What's that big Yankee Lake truck night? Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Wow.
Chevy, go forward. No. Dodge.
It actually doesn't matter. So welcome to what I believe is our 14th episode of the Falls Cast. Yesterday was Labor Day, and we had planned to have a cookout with our friends here on the Falls Cast, but that was quickly washed away, literally, by a pretty intense downpour. My kids got up super early, and I'm guessing now it was because of the thunder, because when I sort of like was half awake, you know, sitting with them who were wide awake at like 7 in the morning, we heard some thunder that was literally shaking our house. It was pretty intense. And I know most of you guys live pretty close to where I live, so you guys must have had that situation too. I think Bart lives in a brick, so it probably wasn't shaking his place, but the rest of y'all must have been having... There it is again! Oh my God.
Y'all. Bounce out the yins.
Y'all come back now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. Somebody get a clicker every time I say it.
That's what, four?
No, it's my goodness.
We can turn it into a drinking game if you want. We might be in trouble, though.
Yeah. There it is.
Oh, geez.
We'll leave that to the listeners. And Mike. And
I'm
me.
Getting the bourbon.
Oh, well, then never mind. I can't hang. Okay, let us begin by talking about what I thought was actually a really cool article in the newspaper over the weekend about downtown investment. We saw pictured Diana Colavecchio, the community development director for the city of Cuyahoga Falls, and her, I guess, sort of lieutenant, Mary Spoggy, pictured downtown as a means by which to promote this kind of idea that in spite of the coronavirus, investment seems to be moving forward in the city, which is good news. They said that the investment continues amid the pandemic, but investment is a bit lower than last year by about $3.2 million. They said that there were a variety of projects that have been delayed, but that none have been canceled, which is great news. They said 67 jobs were created since the beginning of 2019, and 22 of those were at downtown businesses. And Front Street has been open a little over 2 years now. So you may remember it was summer of 18 that they did the official opening, but they actually opened the street in, I think, February of 18. That's good news. They're saying that they expect 52 new jobs to be created by businesses that are opening downtown this year, which includes The Works, Gourmet Popper, Tommy Bruno, which is that building with the kind of weird step ladder looking things on the outside of the building. One of them's broken, and it's right next to where they had sort of a second stage a couple years ago during the downtown festivals. So it's that building real close to the Cashmere Cricket next to the Secrets of the Past shop, you know. So that building is being renovated. They don't know what business it's going to be yet. So they don't have any jobs numbers or anything, but that building is being renovated so that they can bring a business into it. And I guess that used to be a really cool little saloon type of a thing back in the 20s and 30s called Tommy Bruno's. And there's some historical society stuff you can look up, which I did in preparation for talking about this today, which was really cool. There's some cool pictures and stuff. Steven, did you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, somebody posted some pictures. They actually walked through the building right after it had been purchased, like a year or two ago. And by the way, the purchase price was cheap. It was only 40-50 grand, but the place was completely destroyed. I mean, it was holes in the ceiling and holes and through all the floor. You could actually look all the way down through the whole thing, and it was completely good. I don't think it actually been an operating restaurant since the 80s. So yeah, so it needs a lot of work.
Well, it's a really cool building. And I think that
it is a cool building.
It would be really cool. You know, actually, what's funny is looking at the picture that I saw from the Ohio Historical Society, the inside of the place looked very much like the inside of Crave Cantina right now. So like when they have the garage door open, you can kind of see into the bar, and there's like a long bar on the wall and a tiny bit of seating next to it. That's what the inside of the place looked like. But they were all wearing like, you know, suits and ties and all that. So it was a really cool photo to find. And yeah, they're going to renovate that building to make it something new. And then a couple of the other things that are expected to open this year include Magna Wine Boutique, which I had not even heard of until this article. And then Farmer's Rail, which we talked about in an earlier episode of the Falls Cast. It's like a boutique butcher shop, and they're going to have tables and chairs for, I guess, soup, salad, sandwiches type thing. And that's going to go in that building where the old department store was.
The old Levinson building.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Levinson. So yeah, 52 new jobs expected to be created by those businesses. I got to say, I'm most excited for The Works and a little confused by Gourmet Popper since we already have Metropolis. I guess we'll see what the difference is. I think the Gourmet Popper is the place that was in Chapel Hill Mall.
It is the same place, but they have added a bunch of stuff to their menu, including pretzels, pepperoni rolls, baked goods, and a bunch of other stuff. So they do have popcorn, but they also have other stuff that Metropolis doesn't have.
Yeah, and they're going to call it the Gourmet Popper Cafe, and it's at 2052 Front Street. And it looks like there's already like a coming soon sign and all that. And some before and after pictures and stuff on their Facebook page. So it says that they are hoping to open by September. So we might see them open their doors any minute here. So also they reported, and we already knew this, that both Craft Beer Bar and Pav's Creamery closed down during the pandemic and were reopened before the pandemic's even over, because it's not over. Of course, we're still living through it. So that's actually really good news economically for the city, particularly for downtown. They said at the end of June, downtown businesses had committed to $35 million in investment. And that includes 49 Testa townhomes that are going to be across from Hi-Ho, something called Legacy 2020, which I could not find information about in a hasty search, admittedly, but I didn't find anything. What was coming up was like a car dealership. I think Subaru has a car called a Legacy. So it was like, you know,
they do. Yeah.
And then, Summit DD, which we know is going to create 130 new jobs in the city. Great news for downtown businesses, because all those people are going to be down there, you know, for lunch hour, all that extra foot traffic, and good news for the residents, because there's going to be all these new jobs available, which hopefully some people in Cuyahoga Falls will be qualified for and be able to get. So that's awesome. And then additionally, there were, as we reported, 42 COVID-19 CDBG grants that were awarded to businesses in the Falls. Those are $5,000 each. And they have 20 more coming. So 20 more businesses are going to get those $5,000 grants to help keep their doors open. I thought all this information was a really good opportunity for us to talk about downtown in the future. This isn't something we've talked about a whole lot. We've talked a lot about these businesses and stuff. But, you know, I moved here in, 14, I guess. And, you know, some of you guys have been here. I guess all you guys have been here longer than that. And so we've really gotten to see downtown go from, you know, the pedestrian walkway with the sort of sad businesses that were having a hard time making it, to this new vibrant, you know, Hudson-y, Chagrin Falls-y kind of downtown situation that I think is great. So, you know, maybe we can talk about what we think about the downtown area and how it's been going, both in light of the pandemic and in general, and then also what we think about what the future holds in terms of the downtown area. Who wants to start?
I have a good bit of experience hanging out downtown before they turned it into a back into a street, since I was a member of the Studio 2091 gallery for a number of years, so I was there all the time, and I got to see the transformation firsthand. It's definitely a huge deal. It's the game changer for downtown Cuyahoga Falls, as everybody always obviously already knows. My wife and I moved here in 1995, and you know, I can count on my hand before I joined the gallery. I never went down there. Wasn't a reason to go down there. You know, there wasn't really any restaurants. I mean, the gallery was down there. I'd been there for a number of years, but you know, I only occasionally went in there. And I started going there obviously a lot more when I had a space in there. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. A lot of businesses are going in. I think the future's bright. Hopefully they can put the right mix of businesses in there to bring everybody, more people down.
I remember like in around like 2014-ish, my mom and I moved to Portage Towers. And back when they had like iRock, it was like the Rock on the River, but then that moved to Lorraine or wherever. But we used to walk down and we would see these tribute bands every week. So I kind of have memories from that, but I knew then that we had to reopen it, like reopen the road, because it was like, I mean, I remember you would walk by it, because back when I didn't have a car, me and my friends would just walk down there. That's kind of what you just, like when I was a kid, you would just walk down there and hang out at the river or whatever. And it was like, even just like 5 years ago, it was like a ghost town. So it was kind of, I remember when I first found out about it, it was like, that's awesome, because I knew that it'd be a good thing, and I knew that there'd be a lot of jobs, lots of businesses, and a lot of new revenue for the city. So I think the additional jobs that we're getting in the future is just awesome. And it's a great thing to happen to the Falls, just like a Portage Crossing.
I can't wait for Farmers Rail to get there. To have a meat shop or a butcher shop in town is going to be fantastic. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Front Street here at all. We've had the great development with the Portage Crossing. We've had the great development with the downtown. I'm kind of excited to see where we're going to go next. You know, what's the next big area? Are we going to go more back towards French Mill? Or are we going to go more towards Ward 8 down in the valley and do some stuff down there? I mean, if we can keep this kind of momentum going, you know, it'd be great. I mean, I love everything they've done with Front Street. And I hope to continue doing more stuff down there. I mean, there's still plenty of things that can be built upon and renovated, whatnot, but we're kind of looking for the next, where do we go from here kind of thing.
I think that there's a lot of work that could be done yet on State Road. Like, I would love to see something really nice come into the Ponderosa building. It's a joke at this point that it's still sitting there as a Ponderosa, you know?
Yeah, that's been empty since I've worked at the new place. And that was 2002, I think, and that went empty.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there are corners of the city where I know there are residents who would like to see some more attention, you know, to their area of the city. Our friend Drew Riley used to tell me a lot that his constituents over there in Ward 1 would complain that there was a lot of stuff going on downtown, but that they weren't getting a lot, you know, going down on their end. Of course, a lot of those people are very close to Howe Avenue. Howe Avenue's just been resurfaced. We've seen some new businesses go in there. I know Mike and I both love El Papa, which is a great Mexican restaurant. But you know, Howe Avenue's been up and down. I mean, you know, they built a new Outback Steakhouse that's a state-of-the-art building, really nice. But the drugstore, I think it was a CVS right there by where Five Guys and all that is now totally vacant. So, you know, Howe's been seeing all this weird kind of turnover. I mean, you look at, like, Ross, the dress store, where H.H. Gregg used to be, right? Was that H.H. Gregg or was it a Circuit City? It was one of those.
Yes. Yeah, it was both.
It was both.
There was an H.
It was Circuit City and then that.
Yeah, H&H Gregg was where I think Office Max was, but there was a Circuit City across the street that became a Halloween store, that became a Harley store, that became another Halloween store.
Oh, that's right. Circuit
that
City
I think
was
switched out for another Halloween store.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and then it was Circuit City Outlet.
Don't forget about Fredder.
I thought the Harley dealership was still there. It's across.
It's on Home Avenue, across.
Yeah. And as I go to the bank that way a lot, I drive by it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love El Papa's too. It's fantastic.
Yeah, shout out to those guys. They didn't like my review a whole lot when we reviewed them for the Falls Free
Just
Press.
One
but
part.
Yeah.
Delicious food. It is delicious.
I guess he takes his food seriously, and he's an artist. Maybe he was offended. I don't know. It happens.
Yeah. Well, those people are from Michoacan, which is a state of Mexico that I'm very familiar with. You know, I speak Spanish. I'm very, very interested in Latino culture. I've spent time in South America and Central America a lot. It's just something that's a big part of who I am now. You know, my only complaint was just really that they served me ceviche that wasn't really ceviche. But otherwise, I love their food, and my family and I have been there a lot of times. You know, good things in the future for them for sure. But, you know, just kind of thinking about what Mike was saying about what's in the future, I feel like we're going to see some stuff on State Road, maybe. I shouldn't say I feel like we're going to see. I would hope that we would see more development on State Road, just to make that area of the city a little nicer. More development on Howe Avenue, just to continue sort of building on the growth that we're seeing down there right now. And there are sort of like pockets in the city where there are like little bits of like retail. I'm thinking down like Chestnut area, where there's the Boulevard, and then Oh So Sweet, the bakery, Judy, who makes these awesome cookies and all this stuff that you see everywhere now. She's moved her shop down there. I'm not sure they're open yet. It's been a long time coming, but I'm really excited to see her open with like a eat-in sort of cafe and stuff.
I actually drive by that almost daily, that where the new location for the sweet shop, and they're still not open yet. They've been working on it steadily, and it's getting close. They're close. I think they're doing all the renovations themselves. I think that's part of the reason why it's taking so long. Also, I drive by the Ponderosa a lot because that's kind of like my end of town down here. And so when I go to State Road, that's where I go. I actually turn right by the Ponderosa and the AutoZone and, you know, that little car dealership. So I see that all the time, and that's all abandoned. But the guy who owns the Ponderosa also owns that building next to it. And I guess what happened was, I think he went to jail a while back for a couple of years. I think it might have been from tax evasion. I mean, I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that. But I did hear that
you just quoted yourself.
I did. Well, no, I mean it was talk of the town or Facebook, or that's where I got the information from. So I don't know how realistic that is, but I heard that he went to jail, and that's why it was nobody dealing with it for a while. And you know, he's got big, deep pockets because he used to be a doctor, retired doctor. Hmm. That's what I heard. And he doesn't, and he's been working on it slowly, but he's still sitting there. You know, it's who knows what the hell the guys are going to do with it. I'm sure the city knows more about that than anyone. I'm sure that's the idea that it's vacant kind of, you know, irks them,
yeah,
to say the least.
Bart?
Well, I can actually add to that. Yes, he was sentenced to 33 months after an alleged scheme leading to the closure of Ponderosa.
There you go.
This was back in 2008.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's winner, 33 state, months yeah. after 2008 is still a long-ass time ago now.
Was,
so.
Yes.
But there next to the new sushi shop on State Road, the Payless store that just closed down not long ago, I've noticed every morning I go to work, they have been painting the outside and they've gotten rid of all the signage. So it looks like something might be moving in there.
I saw the same thing with Hungry Howie's. I've seen work on the Hungry Howie's building right next to the Shoehorn, you know. It looks like they're fixing up the outside of the building, and maybe I saw some ladders and stuff on the, I mean, you know, the inside of it's all like yellow and checkered tile for the Hungry Howie's like color scheme or whatever. But it looks like they're doing some work in there too. So, I mean, I think that's kind of what's great about living in the city during this time is we're seeing so much development happen. And it is kind of all over the city. Like we say, you know, Oh So Sweet is going in down on Chestnut. We've got businesses popping up on State Road. Our friend Andrew from Black Metal Strength Training just moved his business over to State Road from Front Street, and somebody else moved in where he used to be on, well, not actually Front Street, but on Portage Trail and Front Street right by Flurry's. So there is a lot of stuff coming in. So even if, you know, you see a business close like Hungry Howie's or Payless or something like that, you do see a lot of stuff come open.
So in regards to Front Street, I'm looking forward to the works that's going to be awesome. That opens. And then I just thought of Bailey Road, actually somewhere kind of random where Vincent's and where Byra used to be years and years ago.
Yeah.
So I think there's been a few shops added there. I know there's that store that's right by where Byra used to be. I don't know if there's anything else there though. So I know Vincent's has been there since I've been alive.
I think it's been there since the 50s or something, right?
Yeah.
I think Vincent's is just one of the gems in this city. I really do.
Yeah.
It's a hidden little
pearl,
if you will.
But the next to it, I think, is like a vape shop on one side. And then the other side, there's a Himalayan market, you know, serves the new Nepali population that we have here in the city. Several of those little stores popping up in Cuyahoga Falls and like North Hill and those areas. I haven't been into one of those shops, but I go into shops that look very much like that are like Mexican stores. And we saw those pop up everywhere in Cincinnati when we had like a huge influx of Mexican and Central American transmigrants. So it reminds me very much of that time when I lived in Cincinnati, seeing all these little Nepali stores pop up, because it's a lot of the same kind of advertisements, like, you know, ways to buy like phone cards and like send money home and fresh produce and stuff like that. And that's, I know that's a great resource for some of those people who maybe want to get specialized things. You know, just like we have that really nice, really, really nice Indian grocery down there at Bailey and Front Street. And they opened Singh Biryani next door, which is excellent Indian food. You're right, Patrick, there are some little areas that we probably don't think of quite as much, like Bailey Road, where there are opportunities for economic development, but some of those areas are just so kind of old, you know, it's like kind of like in the back of our minds,
right.
But I really do love Vincent's, and I really do love Singh Biryani, which is on Bailey Road. And, you know, and then there's some of those old standbys like Mark and Philly's and Bailey Road Tavern and all that. So
second, Singh Biryani, we eat there all the time. Fantastic food. And the Indian grocery, we're in there at least once a week.
Oh, good for you. I want to make more excuses to go there. I think the fresh produce should be reason enough.
Yeah. Yeah. The Indian store is amazing. I mean, it's, yeah, it's a gem for sure. If you like Indian food.
Well, as we're seeing, I mean, there's lots of great businesses that are popping up all over in Cuyahoga Falls. I've been in touch with the community development director, Diana Colavecchio, and I'm hoping to have an interview with her soon on the show here, so we can talk about this, and maybe she'll have some other fun stuff to report to us. But for now, it looks like we're seeing, you know, continued investment in the city. It's down just a little bit from where it was this time last year, but considering the pandemic, I think it's going pretty well, and obviously we're all, like I said, it's a good time to live in Cuyahoga Falls, well, with all the business and stuff that's here for us to take advantage of as residents. So
starting on September 16th, Alex Hall has been named to the Cuyahoga Falls Board of Education, recommended by Patrice White. At this time, no other names were recommended for this position. Because of this, Alex has stepped aside and chosen not to take part in this part of the podcast discussion. The board members approved the recommendation of Mr. Hall, 4-0. 8 people submitted applications to the school board seat, left open by former board member Dave Martin upon his resignation, including Richard Barong, Alicia Coco, William Jason Hershey, Douglas Kitts, Carrie Schaefer, Janelle Ware, Sean Williams, and Mr. Alex Hall. And I apologize for every single name that I have just butchered. obviously, Alex is on our podcast roundtable and the editor of the newspaper. He ran for a seat on the school board back in 2019, but ended up behind Mr. Martin by about 500 votes. From there, did anybody have anything to say?
Well, as my husband's best friend, I can say that I am glad that he was appointed. I think he'll do well. Mm-hmm. We all know him pretty well now, and he's very dedicated to this city and making it better. So I think it was a good pick. I think everybody that applied would have been great on the job. I'm hoping that they will run for office when a seat comes up. I think that's exciting for Alex to be able to give that opportunity to sit on the board. He has 2 children that are in preschool right now, or kindergarten.
Kindergarten. Sorry, kindergarten.
So he's kind of a new parent. So he has a lot of skin in the game right now. And I think that will help him make some good choices. Mm-hmm. I think he plans on staying in Cuyahoga Falls for the duration of his, definitely for his kids' school career.
More than likely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
I mean, I think it was a tough decision for the board as a whole. There were a lot of qualified candidates, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, a couple professors. I think there was a couple PTA members in there. But, I mean,
yeah,
it was difficult. And there's going to be, I believe, 2 more seats opening. Is it 1 or 2 opening in the next round of elections?
I know that Alex has talked about that. I can't remember.
I want to say it was 2 because I thought somebody was retiring. And then
how long is Alex's term before
I believe he finishes out Mr. Martin's term, which was going to be another year or year and a half, and then he has to run again?
Yes.
I thought that he gets to serve for another year, and then they're going to put his seat up for election before the term is up. That was my understanding, and then then he has to run again.
Okay.
I think basically it's for like a year or something is what it is. He's going to take over. That was my understanding. I could be wrong.
That makes sense. Terms anyway.
Yeah. I think Alex will do a fantastic job.
And now it is time once again to talk about the arts in Cuyahoga Falls with our friend Bart Sullivan. I thought we were going to get through a whole introduction to this segment without making a joke about what we should call the segment.
Barts with art.
No.
Barts with art.
Art's with Art?
I don't know.
I don't know who Art is.
I'm spitballing.
Art. Art's Bart Corner.
Art, Art. Art with Bart, who doesn't like to fart. I mean,
do people like to fart? Is that like a pastime?
I mean, you know, I like it. I mean, it feels pretty good. I mean,
oh god.
Well, it is a pastime this year.
Oh. Hey.
It's a gas.
Nope.
It's so horrible.
Trick's just rolling his eyes. He's like, "Why am I here?"
I think at some point, I think you should take a lot of little edits, and you can make a little funny little clip. And you can post that.
You can do a mic, yeah, mic.
Just like a mic montage. I'm swearing.
I've been threatening to do that for a long time. And now we return to Bart Sullivan's Art Corner on the Falls Cast, which we never started.
I will take that name.
Okay.
Is that good?
Bart, tell us about your trip to Jenks, and then we already talked about Upfront Art Space and... you know, I think, okay, sorry. I was going to say, I think this is a good opportunity for us to talk about sort of the history. Since we were talking about Front Street, maybe Steven could tell us, and maybe Bart could tell us too, a little bit about Studio 2091 and kind of the history of the arts community here in the city. Because I think Jenks is a good way to kind of think about how those things have come together. Am I right about that, Bart?
Definitely. And I don't have a whole lot of history on the Jenks building. In fact, that's going to be in a separate article than the one that I just sent you. But it definitely, that building is from 1929. And there's not a whole lot aside from painting and, you know, putting up a spot for walls, you know, or other in other places in the building. There wasn't a whole lot that they had to reset up to turn it into a gallery.
So it's been pretty well maintained.
Yeah, it has stood the test of time.
That's awesome. And so you said they do more than just art in there, right? Like, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there were a couple of sites where they're planning stages. They've already got a couple of stages set up that they're hoping to have, you know, theater productions or, you know, concerts once COVID ends, you know, and it's easier to have people in a tight space. But I did a walk around, got to see the basement. And there's one spot, it's sort of over by the garage of it, that there's a trap door. Hmm. And from what we could gather, you know, they might have done oil changes back there at one point.
Hmm.
Because there's just this random trap door that you open it up and it's like, it's just a flimsy piece of wood that we noticed a couple times people walking by. Like, you step in the right spot, and it makes you kind of worried that if you step off of it, you're going to fall right through.
Well, it reminds me of Ohio Brewing. You know, they had a special sort of door installed
exactly,
the bar to send the grain down to the miller so that they could use that to grind up the grain and make the beer. So
I used to go in there and buy taps and dies and brake lines and stuff. And it used to be a fully functioning machine shop. You can go have your engine, you know, machined and heads machined for an engine. And
all that's still there.
Yeah. Well, and actually it makes me kind of sad that that's gone, because it was a valuable resource. There isn't a lot of those places left. And I'm kind of sad that it's gone. I'm glad that it's being repurposed into art, but I'm also mourning the loss of a valuable resource for somebody who likes to work on their car.
Exactly.
Cool building, though. And which, you know, I hope they do a lot with it.
And now I'm being stupid here. Big shocker. Which one was the Jenks building?
It's the one across the street from the Sheraton Suites.
Oh, the old Schreiber? The old Schreiber Auto Shop?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
And all that equipment is still there. I guess last week somebody came in and needed a part fix. Like, I don't remember if it was a die or something, but they had needed something fixed, and thankfully somebody was there who knew what to do.
Yeah.
And they just went back, and all the machinery's still back there. They just fixed it up.
I need a metal lathe.
That's pretty cool. That's actually pretty cool that there's still somebody in there that can still do that stuff. That's a dying art, you know. People just buy new parts, you know, instead of remaking them, so.
So, Bart, you talked about them doing maybe like a farmer's market there?
There is a farmer's market. They currently have 4 artists in residence, and one of them is the farmer's market. that they're having every Saturday. And it's a very, very small, corner farmer's market. You know, here's a table, here's some chairs, and that's all it really is.
Hmm.
But it did draw in, you know, a pretty good crowd. And when I say pretty good crowd, I mean, people were distanced from each other and set up, you know, among three sets of tables, you know, three tables on that little block.
Right on. Yeah. So this is all kind of reminding me, like I was talking about, and what came up earlier, of Studio 2091, which used to be right there by Crave Cantina, had the big sort of octopus drawing on the front of it, or painting on the front of it. Which was run by Amy Mothersbaugh. Of course, Mothersbaugh, a very well-known name in Cuyahoga Falls and Akron. And thanks to Devo, you know, nationwide, maybe even worldwide. and then, Stephen, I know you had art in there for many years. Can you give us a little background about that? Because maybe that'll help us kind of understand the art scene in the city.
The building... has been in the Mothersbaugh family for many, many years. I think it's since the 60s. I think that's about right. It's early 60s. And then her dad ran it as it used to be a an employment off,
like an agency, like a headhunter.
Employment agency. And that's what it was for that for many years. And Amy had worked for her dad for a number of years as she ran it for him, and then eventually that went out of business when her dad retired. Amy did that for another 5 or 10 years, and then she decided she didn't want to do it anymore, and she leased this to the place to an artist. Actually, I went to high school with him, and he turned it into a gallery. And I guess he ran that for a couple of years, and I guess he wasn't making enough money on it, and he had to shut it down, and turned it over to Amy, and turned it back over to Amy because he couldn't pay the rent anymore. He just gave her a gallery, and then she took it over, and she's been doing it ever since. I think she was doing it for over 10 years.
There was a drum shop there in the meantime at one point. I can't remember when it was, but...
I'm going off of what Amy told me. She didn't mention the drum shop. I mean, you could be right. I mean,
The drum shop because my dad created drums that he put up outside, basically the same place where the activist was.
Well, it could have been in between the gallery and the employment agency too, probably because. And then, so it's been a gallery for a while. It had been a gallery for a while, and now Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo bought the building off his dad a number of years ago. I don't know when it was, so he's owned it for a while, and I don't know what his plans are. I know that there's like four apartments upstairs, and they're in various stages of repair and disrepair because the roof has had problems with leaking for a number of years. And it's an old building, built 1832. I think it was built. It's the second oldest brick building in Summit County.
Wow.
And that has a lot of history too. It was a bank at one time. It was a speakeasy during Prohibition and a bunch of stuff. And I'm sure it's got some checkered past as well as, like, I think it was a grocery store at one point. So, I mean, it's had a lot of history. Cool building. I love having my art there. Every month there was a gallery show opening, and then we had a big party. And since really didn't get very much foot traffic because it wasn't a street. It was, you know, a walking pedestrian mall. So we didn't get a lot of foot traffic because there wasn't anything else, any other draws down there. So during all the times that there wasn't a gallery show, hardly anybody would come in, maybe a couple, 5-10 people a day if we're lucky on a good day. So the gallery shows would be, you know, 100, 200, 300 people would come in a night. All her friends would come, you know, the artist friends. We'd have a big party, and then people would buy art. And that's when you made most of your sales during that one day. And so if you didn't have your friends show up, you didn't sell anything. You know, people that you knew that was interested in your art, they didn't show up. So that was the downside to it. But it was a big family. Everyone knew each other. Every week they always seen the same people coming through, and they'd, you know, sometimes they'd skip a couple shows and they come in. It was a cool experience to be involved in that. And I cherish all those years that I was in doing it. Got to meet a lot of cool people.
And it was really more about artists in residence, right? I mean, it wasn't like CVAC, Cuyahoga Valley Arts Center, is really more about sort of teaching and those kinds of things.
There was like, I think there's one, two, three, five, maybe six spaces upstairs that you could rent a space fairly inexpensively and have you work in it. But you know, she had artists from all over the world come and do shows there. So, I mean, there was many months where nobody in the gallery actually had a show. It was like another artist came in, and there's a lot of good artists came through that place and they had some quality stuff. So it wasn't just the artists in residence. It was an actual real functioning gallery with artists from all over Northeast Ohio and all over the world.
So like galleries with, it was a gallery with artists on display, artists in residence, but it wasn't so much like classes and those kinds of things like Cuyahoga Valley Arts
Center. Occasionally she would offer those. But no, that wasn't really the focus.
Yeah.
It was teaching. No.
Well, I know we were all pretty, pretty sad to see that go. And of course we do have a really cool, thing in Upfront Art Space now, which is going to be, moving to, the corner there at Portage Trail, which is cool because it'll be on the first floor instead of upstairs. And now we have this cool thing in the old, Jenks building. Which is sounds like it's going to have a variety of different kinds of art, visual art, theater, maybe live music, and apparently machining.
Bart, do you have any idea how much they would charge for a space? Is there spaces available?
There are still spaces available. In fact, I don't believe I put it in the article. Alex, you can check when you get to there. But he does have a sign on the in the window on the side of the building that says opportunities available. And it has his phone numbers and, you know, find them on Facebook and whatnot. But I know they've been working, the artists that are there. And then, you know, everybody who's involved has been cleaning the place up. When I was there Saturday, they just finished painting a couple different rooms. And there's like spaces, there's hallways between rooms that are pretty much set up to be a gallery space in themselves. There was an entire dance studio on the second floor.
Wow.
That, you know, basically has now become the storage of a separate dance studio that's just closed down.
Yeah, and there's always like a lot of art like outside, and like they have a lot of like really cool, colorful, eclectic, you know, kind of stuff in the windows. And, you know, it's like, I just noticed it over the last couple of weeks. Like every time I would drive by, there'd be a whole bunch of different, you know, different like sort of artworks and stuff, even just outside and in the windows. So that was kind of what
it's definitely not going to be, you know, like the memories I have of Amy's place with, you know, Hula Hoop Night and bringing out the projector and watching movies outside, you know, at the same time, watching mental hygiene films at the same time as there's a movie playing at the amphitheater. So no one knows actually which movie they're supposed to go to.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to your article going up on the website, Bart, and we hope that everybody will check it out and support local art, of course. Really support anything local that you can. There's been a houseplant craze in the middle of the pandemic here, and a friend of a friend opened a houseplant business where she sells really cool houseplants in awesome like pots that she pots for people, and she even delivers them. It's called Flourish Plant Market. And I wanted to shout it out because my mother just moved to Monroe Falls from Cincinnati, and we went and got a really cool bird's nest fern and brought it to her as a housewarming present. So check out Flourish Plant Market, another really cool art, I guess.
I am obsessed with plants. You guys have been in my house. I think you know that. I'm excited. I did not know.
You've been enthusiastically looking at Mike for the last 30 seconds or so.
I have been like, you guys have not you've held this out. I'm so excited.
You were supposed to not say a word about it.
Oh. I just delivered my mother's plant today, and she loved it, and it was a really cool pot. It's right here in Cuyahoga Falls. This woman who's putting these together, she pots them for free. You buy the plant, you pick out a pot, she pots it for you, and she'll even deliver it. And right after I bought mine, another friend of mine got one who has also become obsessed with plants, I have to say. But yeah, there's a lot of really great opportunities to take advantage of the lots of like local businesses in Cuyahoga Falls, which would include these art galleries. And, you know, we're sad that that Studio 2091 is gone, but there are lots of great places to get lots of cool local stuff. You know, and a lot of these people were usually doing their business at farmers market type, you know, events, which are not easy to come by right now because of the pandemic. So if you're looking for something to buy, whether it's a piece of art, a potted plant, or even like, you know, bath and body type products, you should definitely ask around social media, all your networks and stuff, and see if there's anything local you can buy to support these local artisans who are creating excellent products that we all want. So, with that, I think it's time to say goodbye for this issue of Fallscast. Maybe the shortest episode ever for our roundtable discussion, anyway. Our interview this week is with me, which is really weird to say, but it'll become clear why, if it's not already, since you guys already discussed the school board while I was gone. So
what you're saying is people could fall asleep for the interview.
Yeah.
It's nap time.
I have that effect on people. Yeah.
No, we were making fun of your hairstyle. That's what we were doing.
I do change the hairstyle a lot. I've been doing that the last few months. I'm not sure where I'm going with it. I'm currently happy with it, so it might be like this for a while. We'll see.
So like a month. So like in a month, you might get bored of it.
Well, what's been happening lately is the beard has been. I've been back and forth about the beard. I think what happens is I grow it out and then I trim it wrong and then I get mad and I shave it off. So we'll see. By the end of November, I'll have an excellent November beard. So.
Boo.
I'll be right there with you.
Yeah, we'll see if Jen lets it go that long.
Yeah, you know, she's already kind of scoffing at it. So I haven't gotten very much kissing in, so that's for sure. She doesn't like it. It's too scratchy in her face, which makes me sad. Eventually, I might give in and just shave it just so I can kiss her.
It's a good reason. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for another episode of the Fallscast. We look forward to seeing each other, I'm sure, all next week when there will not be a 3-day weekend. And so far, we have not skipped a week. Just saying. 14 episodes in now. So we're basically crushing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to all the listeners. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye, y'all.
Y'all.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
We are here with Alex Hall, who was just appointed by a 4-0 vote to the Cuyahoga Falls School Board, which became vacant after Dave Martin resigned his position. You may know Alex as the moderator of the Falls Cast and as my kids call him, my husband's best friend. Alex? First, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity to ask you a few questions so our listeners can get to know you better.
Of course, as if they don't know me already.
Well, let's see if they can get to know you a little better. So can you give me some background of who you are and what motivated you to want to become a school board member?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know how far back you want to go, but I'll just say... I grew up in the Cincinnati area, but my family moved around a little bit. My father is a veteran of the Vietnam War, so he worked off and on for the disabled American veterans as kind of a photojournalist, but really he was the assistant national director of communications So at various points in his career, he worked either in Alexandria, Kentucky, which is where their national headquarters are, or in Washington, D.C. So for a short time when I was a little kid, like first through third grade sort of thing, we actually lived in the D.C. area, not in D.C., but close enough by that we could, you know, take the train and every weekend go see yet another monument or museum or whatever. He's also a photographer, so I have pictures of myself in front of like every possible Washington D.C. thing, which was cool being that young and being exposed to that kind of stuff, even though I don't think I really understood quite what was going on, you know, politically. So but the rest of the time we spent living mostly in southwestern Ohio. I was born in Hamilton. You know, lived in another suburb nearby called Fairfield, graduated high school living there, worked in some restaurants, was a moonlighting musician, and started college in 2001 at Miami University. I went as a non-traditional student, so I was actually in school from like January 2002. And it took me a while to graduate. I actually ended up graduating in May of 07. And by that time, I had already applied to and been accepted to a couple different graduate schools in English with a focus on literature. So I decided to go to the University of Arkansas because there was a scholar there who I really wanted to work with because I wanted to study dystopian literature, which was like my main focus at that time. And so I did. I went to Arkansas. The stars kind of aligned for my wife and I to go down there. So we lived there for 2 years while I finished my master's degree. And at the end of those 2 years, I didn't really want to live in Arkansas anymore, even though I liked the school really well. And my wife is actually originally from Mentor, or as they say there, Mentor.
Right.
It's Mentor, but it's Mentor.
Mentor.
So, you know, we had met in Cincinnati because she lived down there. We met in 2001, and she's 5 years older than I am. So she was already like beginning her career, and I hadn't even started my undergrad. So wanting to be with her, you know, kicked me kind of into gear. And that was one of the big, slaps on the back I needed, kicks in the pants, I guess I needed to get started. So anyway, we moved from Arkansas back to Northeast Ohio because I thought it would be nice if I could go somewhere that would let her be closer to her family, since she hadn't been close to them since, I think around 2000, maybe the late 90s. So I got accepted to Kent State University, for my PhD in English. And, we moved actually originally to Stowe. We were there for 5 years, renting. And at a certain point, just decided that it was time to put down some roots. I completed my PhD in 2013 and decided to move to our house here in Ward 4 of Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. And while we were moving in, my wife was a few months pregnant with our twin daughters, who you know very well.
Yes.
And, you know, they were born in January of 15. And, you know, one thing led to another. And as you've probably picked up, you know, from listening to the Fallscast before, 2016 was a game changer for me. I felt like after that election, I really needed to get involved. So I called up my councilwoman, Mary Nichols Rhodes, and said, "What can I do?" And she gave me a list, you know. It was like, become a neighborhood ambassador, you know, become a precinct committee member, you know, just all these things. And so I did everything on the list I could and, you know, just got involved. And in 2017, I helped the mayor's reelection campaign, mostly just by putting out yard signs on his behalf. Did a couple lit drops, knocking on doors, stuff like that, that you have to do for campaigns. And then 2 years later, decided that maybe I'd like to try my hand at running for something. And school board seemed like a really good fit because here I had these two little girls who, by the way, I was stay-at-home dad to. My wife went back to work, and I stayed with them all the time, really just until the pandemic. I was with them, you know, every day, stay-at-home dad style, while teaching at Kent State at night, part-time. And so when I decided to run in 2019, I was doing that, you know, from the perspective of somebody who has little kids who are about to go into kindergarten, because they were about to turn 5 in January of 2020. You know, that meant that this fall they'd be entering kindergarten. So I was thinking, well, I've got kids who are about to go into kindergarten, and I'm teaching freshmen in college at Kent State, which means I'm seeing what students are like when they come out of public schools, very often including Cuyahoga Falls, but also other districts as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a researcher. I guess you could say I'm a scholar, because I've actually published things. So I have like very keen attention to detail, apart from my one announcement that I was appointed to the school board, which we could talk about.
Yeah, you definitely got handed on that one.
I made a splash, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
So yeah, I ran, you know, also as somebody who supports the arts, because I'm a musician. I continued playing music, you know, ever since I was about 17. I've always got some kind of band who's playing somewhere and doing something. I was unfortunately not successful in my run in 2019. The two incumbents, Dave Martin and Patrice White, were reelected. Patrice White was reelected overwhelmingly, and Dave Martin was elected with about 500 more votes than me. Anthony Gomez, who I know and I have a lot of respect for, who sits on the school board, actually told me that he got fewer votes than I did and won in 2017. Than I got and lost in 2019. And I don't really have a lot of explanation for that. Could be that the levy brought out a lot more voters or something, but you know, that's the way it shook out. And so I honestly was not planning to run again. I wasn't sure I wanted to go through it a second time.
Right.
And I have been looking for work, because I've only been teaching part-time, and now my kids are going back to school, and I'm thinking like I could get something full-time and make something like that work. And I actually sit on the parks board as the school district's appointee to the parks board. You know, Woodridge and Falls School District both get appointees to the parks board, and then the mayor appoints 3 people. So I was sitting on the parks board, and I had this idea to utilize the SIL property for something. Somebody on social media had posted that they thought there should be a dog park there, and I actually think that the dog park in Waterworks is probably close enough in proximity to service, you know, people who want to have a dog park,
right,
you know, close to SIL. But I had been involved with an event that happened at the SIL property, and I thought, man, they really should do something with this. And they're unsure what the future of that property is going to be. And the school board said, you know, we don't know, but even if we do use it for something, it's going to be a long time from now. So I thought, well, couldn't we put a park there? And I thought disc golf, you know. So it turns out disc golf is actually something that was mentioned by a lot of people in the master plan, or the continuous improvement plan that the parks department and the parks board has been working on to see how to improve the parks moving forward. And so I went to Mr. Gomez and the board president, Ms. Schofield, and said, hey, is there any way we could make this happen? And they said, well, we're just going to have to get together with Parks and Recreation. A day or two later, I found out that Mr. Martin had resigned his position. And I thought, you know, I said I wasn't going to run, but the difference here is that I would be appointed, and then I would run in a special election to stay on the board for the 2 remaining years in Mr. Martin's term, at which point I could see if I wanted to then run for an additional full-length term. Okay. So
what year would that be that you would have to run in a special election? Is that in 1 year or?
So in a little over a year now, I'll be sworn in on the 16th. a week from tomorrow. We're recording this on September 8th. And so a little over a year from then, I will have to, you know, be reelected in a special election just for the remaining 2 years on Mr. Martin's mm-hmm. term. And if I'm reelected, I'll stay then in the seat if I'm elected, I'll stay in that seat until 2023, at which point I would decide if I wanted to, you know, keep the seat or not. And if I wanted to keep it, I'd have to run. So yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that certainly wasn't the short version.
Well, tell me what you think the board's like role and responsibility is. What do you think that they, what's their purpose?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the major thing is that it sets policy for the district. But I like to think of it, and this is not entirely analogous, but I like to think of the superintendent kind of as the president of the school district, and the school board as like Congress, you know. So the school board is sort of like the Senate and the House of Representatives all in one, and the superintendent's kind of like the president. You can almost think of city council the same way. You know, the mayor is the president, mm-hmm. and the city council is the Congress. And so a lot of things that come before the board, including policy, but also sometimes like curriculum even, are you know, really important, and it's the responsibility of the board to, you know, to implement those. Well, not to implement, but to approve of, you know, changes mm-hmm. or enact policies or whatever. Some of that is stuff I'm going to be learning as a member of the board. But for instance, I know that curriculum is something that they will take an interest in. And we know that because they recently had this resolution to combat racism in the district. And in that resolution, they talked about how they wanted to see the curriculum change to reflect, you know, indigenous and mm-hmm. other marginalized people. You know, there are some ways in which curriculum is going to be addressed by the board in addition to policymaking and things like that.
So what is your vision for education in this community?
My vision for education, I have to say, I think that the vision they had, well, put simply, I think that the district should be providing the best possible education it can for the students in the district.
Right.
And the board can help ensure that that's happening by way of oversight, allocation of resources, you know, all those kinds of things that the community needs to have input on, you know, by way of the school board. They have a very detailed plan, the strategic plan, which I think is good. And, you know, I read it in 2019 when I was running, and I think that it's very concise, and detailed, and concise isn't the right word. I think that it's very detailed, and that it lays out the plan in an effective way for how to continue delivering the best possible education, while also improving at the same time. And, you know, my experience as a teacher, you know, arms me with the knowledge that you cannot ever really be the sort of teacher that, how to say this? I think sometimes people think teachers design a class and then quit. They just design the class, you know, and then they teach it the same way for the next 30 right. years until they start getting that pension. A district can't do that, in part because of changing requirements and things like that that come, you know, like from the state house even. But also because in practice, you learn what works in education and what doesn't. And so they have to mm-hmm. balance what's working in their classrooms with what's working or with what's coming down from the state house. You know, my vision would be for the district to continue improving based on the results it's getting to the extent that it can within the context of thinking about, you know, what's happening at the state house and those kinds of things. there are special things that I would love to see that may not ever be possible. I really don't know. When I was running in 2019 and people would ask me, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
I would provide universal pre-K for every student in the district, for anybody who wants it, because I think that that's so important. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, striving to improve education based on the results that we're getting, you know, making sure that we are able to meet the requirements that are sent down from, you know, State House and even the federal government, I guess, would be, you know, my vision for education in the district, you know, to answer your question.
Do you think the school board has been decent at communicating with the public? Do you think that they could do better? What would you... How do you see yourself communicating with the public? Are you open to meetings? Do you, I mean, I know that Anthony is very good at, you know, answering questions on Facebook. Are you open to that, or do you think that they could do better at communicating?
Well, I think there's two questions there. You know, the one is, you know, am I open to talking to people in the community? The answer is absolutely yes. I've been thinking about,
mm-hmm,
whether maybe I want to do like an office hours type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a county councilman, John Schmidt, who represents a large part of Cuyahoga Falls, who does regular office hours. I think pre-COVID he would have done them like in the library. That's something I've thought about. Maybe that's something I could do. I just need to make sure that that's okay for me to do. I assume it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see why it wouldn't be. So that's something I've considered. And then I'm going to transform my election page, you know, my campaign page, on at least on Facebook, but on other platforms as well, to official board member pages, where people can feel free, to reach out to me. I am very interested in hearing from people, in the district about, you know, how they feel about issues that come before the board. And
mm-hmm,
when I ran in 2019, one of the first things I did was take a meeting with a community member who's very passionate about the school district, but with whom I have some disagreements, because I wanted to hear what it was he had to say, you know. And
mm-hmm,
and he gave me a copy of the Ohio School Finance Blue Book, which is, you know, great for falling asleep. But I read it cover to cover because I thought, you know, this is the book that a treasurer, or that a would-be treasurer, yeah, of a school district would read, in order to understand how, you know, to implement the policies and things that are necessary for that kind of a job. So I read it. You know, there are some issues, with, for instance, you know, district funding and stuff, like, you know, the rule that makes it so that, like, if you pass a levy and it's based on a particular tax rate, if the tax rate goes up, the millage that's passed with the levy doesn't go up with that tax rate. So even when people are paying higher taxes, the levy does not produce additional funds, which can be difficult when you're talking about things like inflation and whatnot.
Sure.
You know, hurting districts. But the other part of your question, I think, was the way the district communicates with the public, which, mm-hmm, is, I think, a separate piece. And first of all, I would say they've hired somebody whose job is going to be PR. And that was part of their, I think it was part of the strategic plan, for them to do that. So that's part one. They have recently started having a series of podcasts hosted by the superintendent called Black Tiger Talk, and I've listened to all those episodes. They've been particularly useful during COVID-19. In one case, the superintendent, Dr. Nichols, had a representative, maybe even the head of Summit County Public Health, on, and she was great at explaining, you know, what's going on with the coronavirus and what needs to happen for, you know, for schools to be able to think about safely returning. So that's one part of it. And then, you know, they need to update that website. The website's just notoriously difficult to navigate. And I think that that is part of what the job of this PR person is going to be, is, you know, working on making that website more user friendly. And then, of course, social media. You know, I'll say this, and this isn't about the district, but I remember some years back being at a downtown event on Friday, one of the Falls Downtown Fridays events.
Mm-hmm.
And the director of the NECO office, Kelly Crawford Smith, who that's the office that plans these events and stuff, told me about how there were people who were complaining that they hadn't heard about these events happening. And they would say, like, well, you should advertise on the radio. And she said, we did. Well, you should advertise on Facebook. We did. Well, you should advertise on TV. I mean, they advertised everywhere, and it was still difficult to reach people. I do think the school district can do a better job of communicating with families and parents. And I think they're working on that piece. But I don't think that even with their best efforts, they're ever going to be able to reach everybody. And you know, to some extent, it's going to be up to, you know, parents and families to really, you know, pay attention to make sure that they're taking advantage of everything that they can take advantage of, and also tracking the progress of their students and all those kinds of things. So it's slippery, but I think they're taking steps to do better with communicating with the community and with the families.
That's good.
And of course, I am more than willing to, you know, hear from community members to help determine, you know, my stance on various issues.
Yeah, no, I think that that's great. I mean, even if people disagree, I think it's important to have a conversation. So that's good to hear. I have one more question for you. And it is, what do you think is the biggest challenge Cuyahoga Falls Schools is going to face in 2021?
It's a good question. I think one of the issues is always just funding. And I don't know if that's going to be their biggest obstacle. I'm sure certain people working for the district will always see that as their biggest obstacle.
Money talks.
Yeah. I mean, and schools are notoriously underfunded, you know, for so many reasons. Some of that, I think, depends on, you know, these couple of levies that are already on the books being renewed. There is not a levies are not especially popular with the community right now, just because of the how big the last levy that we passed was. But these levies that are going to be on the ballot this year are just continuations of existing levies. So I'm hopeful that they will be renewed. You know,
so that's going to be important to communicate that to the public, that it's a renewal, not additional, and that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there are already conversations happening, you know, within the levy committee about how to effectively communicate that to the public. But I mean, you know, the easiest thing to say is just that it's a renewal. It's not something new. You've already been paying it, and it's for. You know, continuing to fund various aspects of the district that are required. You know, it's expenses and things like that. It's not building a new school. That piece has already been passed, and they're just at this point trying to figure out how to proceed. A lot of things are being done, but it's going to be a long time before, you know, they're actually, you know, tearing down Bullock and putting up a new structure. But I think probably just dealing with how to get the most out of the funding that the district has is always going to be a challenge. But that might be even more of a challenge if for some reason those levies don't pass. And I certainly hope they do. And I hope people will support those renewals. If you mean in light of COVID-19, I think that, I mean, I'm a parent, you know, and I'm seeing what this is like for kindergartners. So, you know,
yeah.
You picture the first day of school for a little kid and it's like happy times, you know, backpack right. on and they're holding up the little thing that says it's my first day of school. And I mean, you know, you were there and
I remember those. Yeah. It was a long, long time ago, but I do remember that.
So, you know, my kids didn't get that.
Right.
I mean, we went down and we took a picture in front of the sign there at Lincoln. But they actually did their kindergarten screening in the building just because they were just in there a couple of students at a time. And they have a Chromebook and all that. But one of my daughters is on an IEP. I have twin daughters. One of them is on an IEP. You know, Zsa Zsa. She can be a lot. She's not always a lot, but she can be. And when it comes to concentrating on something that she doesn't really want to concentrate on, that doesn't hold her attention every second, it's very difficult for her. So we've struggled with this. You know, I guess my big hope is that, going into the winter, I guess we call it spring semester, but it's mostly winter, going into the spring semester, that we're able to get in the building safely and offer education to these kids, in person. But we have to do that, based on the advice of Summit County Public Health, and ensuring that the coronavirus is under control enough that we can safely do that. I am not a medical professional. I am not an epidemiologist. I'm not even a scientist. I don't, you know, science was not even my forte. I'm an English professor, you know?
Right.
I feel like I have to listen to the experts, no matter how inconvenient it is for me. And so I think the challenge in 2021, as far as the coronavirus is concerned, is just, you know, helping parents continue to understand that a lot of what we need to do, is going to be based on the best scientific advice and, listening to the experts, and, it's going to be tough. But there are good people working in the district. If you listen to the Black Tiger Talk podcast, there are good people working in the district who, are on top of this stuff, and they're working very hard to make sure that this is all proceeding, in the most, fact-based way, so that we can all be safe and, all get the education that we want for our kids, get them back in those buildings with those teachers and, you know, just return to some sense of normalcy.
It will happen someday, hopefully, you know, sooner than later, but well, I appreciate your time and I hope this was helpful to our listeners to kind of get to know you better. And, you know, I think even though I've known you for several years now, I learned some stuff about you too. So thank you for talking to us today.
Absolutely. Maybe a little awkward because I'm on the podcast, but I really do want to try and create some separation. That's why I'm trying to, you know, let you guys talk about school stuff without me and avoid any awkwardness.
Conflict of interest. No, well, I appreciate, you know, I think that this was good and, you know, people need to get to know you and, yeah, I think it was good. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
You sure will. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Fallscast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.